And maybe the predator is like the big predator.
The definite article over just predator. That's the difference is the.
But what I'm saying is though, the is maybe definitive of the big bad predator who beats up the smaller predator.
Uh-huh.
Like okay. He's the predator. Maybe it's not even the predator, it's the predator.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Hey, Ted, it's Thursday this week, so we're doing a day early.
That's right, Jimmy. Thank you.
Yeah, I want to welcome everybody to episode 33. You know, we got to work around your high society dinner parties and all this other plans you tend to have on the weekends now. You can't make time for me anymore, I guess. Huh? I got to make time for you.
We're busy. You know, we're busy here in Los Angeles.
I guess so. You're highfalutin.
It's summertime, you know. You're about to get busy.
Yeah, well, I finished work on the 26th. That was my last day for the school year. And
awesome.
And well, the school year ended a while ago, but I worked a couple weeks longer. And yeah, we're going to be heading cross country doing like the roundabout, you know, to Mount Rushmore in Chicago, Boston, Nashville, Memphis.
Wow.
Yeah, in a car with a 3 and a 5 year old.
Who don't do well in cars?
Well, they do well in cars. I've never been like 80 hours of driving with them. I don't know what they're going to do or not do. I mean, if we don't kill each other first, maybe we'll come back, you know, in August. And, you know, hey, right there's a good segue really quick before yes. We get into anything further. So with this trip, you know, we like to take vacations, my wife and I, and we're taking the boys this year. So we're going to be on hiatus for about 4 weeks. And we're going to be replaying some of our favorite episodes for the month of July and returning in August with a new segment or two, you know, but we'll leave that for a little surprise. So something fun we want to add in.
So when the kids go back to school, we'll be back at work.
That's right.
Here at Trailer Junkies Podcast.
That's right. I think our next record day will be, what, August 3rd? And then we'll be dropping again like the week after that. So
yeah, like mid-August.
Yeah, so that'll probably be our next drop after this episode, and then we'll get back into it and hit the Oscar season.
I have to say, because you said August 10th, I have to say happy anniversary, because I can get in trouble for forgetting my anniversary even when it's not my anniversary. If I hear my anniversary mentioned and I don't like acknowledge that that's my anniversary, then I have forgotten in the future. It's like, was it Tom Cruise movie? You know, Minority Report. Like, if I hear August 10th or something, then it's like, you know, anyway, so there.
Well, in my anniversary, it's coming up here a little. It's today's date, the 28th. My uh-huh. anniversary is July 1st, so it will have passed by the time this airs.
So there you go.
Yeah, 13 years. Oh, yeah, yay.
Happy anniversary to you guys, too.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. So, how about you? Anything other than, you know, all your dinner parties and stuff? Anything else exciting going on in life?
Well, today was quite the day. I had a chocked full day of fun at work. I was interacting with a lot of podcasters in the morning and last night, and that carried on through the day. And my office actually took off the afternoon for the only day game the Dodgers are playing this year. So it was a noon day game. 15, 18 of us got together. And got out to the Dodgers Stadium and watched the Dodgers versus the Cubs. Sadly, the Dodgers lost, but not too sadly for me. I'm an Orioles fan, being from back east before the Nats came to DC. So my wife and I are Orioles fans, but we're not huge into baseball. But you know, it's always fun to go to the ballpark and to spend $22 on a Michelado? What is it called? I don't even know what it's called.
I don't even know what that is.
It's like a Bloody Mary with a beer instead of hard liquor, and it's like $22.50, and I was like, I guess I'm just going to pay $22.50 because I'm not going to like say that's too high a price for
holy
a can
cow.
Of beer.
It's $22 beer night.
It's a special. But then I left there early and I cleaned myself up and I had a coffee with the president of our company. So that was kind of a big deal.
Wait, the president of your company?
Yeah. Not Bob, but a couple, you know, ranks down from him.
Oh, wow. That's what I thought you meant at first. I was like, wait, you did what? Man. So, okay, well, hey, man, good for you.
Yeah.
I hope that went well.
That went well, you know, just trying to get my name out there and keeping it, you know, keep a top of mind, you know, with the big boss.
Is he a listener?
He listened to me today for about an hour, but that's about
funny.
It.
So 81 home games, and they have one day game all season? The Dodgers?
Yeah, I think the woman at work who set it up said that she found some that are like 3 o'clock starts and things like that. But if you just want to like go to work and pretend like you're going to work, and then you go see a baseball game, and then you get off like right around the end of work.
Yeah.
This was the only one that would fit.
Oh, I see.
Get people home, you know, in time to pretend like they worked all day.
Yeah. Well, it's because it's the Cubs.
Although you're sweaty and you have, you know,
and you're sunburnt.
Smell like beer. And
I guess it's because the Cubs, because Wrigley Field, like half their days or half their games are day games. And even before August 8th, 1988, that was when they got lights in Wrigley Field.
Wow.
So that's one of those things. Like, if you don't know that, they take away your Chicago card. Anyway, so what's on the agenda for tonight?
Oh, and then one last story, because it scared the bejesus out of Anne. So earlier this week, I was resetting our alarms because our whole summer's thrown off. So I have to wake up at 5 o'clock again to try to go and work out.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm getting back on that schedule. And so Sunday night, I go to set our alarm, and I'm setting the alarm on Alexa, but I do it on the little app on the phone. So I'm in bed setting the alarm, and it has like cool new celebrity voices. It had Alec Baldwin, but then remember Alec Baldwin and Jason Schwartzman did this crazy Alexa ad campaign where they're doing Alexa, you know, they had a wild night and they have to ask Alexa what they did, and they do a whole bunch of stuff and order socks and stuff like that. Well, Jason Schwartzman was the other person in that ad, and I said, oh, this is awesome. Like, I'll get woken up like Wes Anderson, you know, like Rushmore. And so I picked Jason Schwartzman, and I didn't think anything of it. Rolled over, went to sleep. I wake up the next morning, and Anne's like, what's going on? What's that? And I was like, what are you talking about?
She's like,
who's that? And it's just Jason Schwartzman just quietly talking, trying to wake you up. And I was like, oh no, I've totally freaked Anne out. Like, there's a person in our room.
And don't tell me it's going like, Anne, wake up, Anne. It's 5 a.m, Anne. And then she's like, what the?
But he was talking so softly, it didn't even register on me. You know, I had to get, you know, a little shove from the missus to do that. So
I guess one quick thing, too, before we get into these movies. But so last week we talked about comedians in cars getting coffee, and we said, they're all like, you know, 13 minutes and 12 minutes and 19 minutes and all this. So we're almost done with the entire like that, well, season. Well, he doesn't call them seasons. He like the first season is called the first cup.
Ah.
So that's like the little quip they have there, which, you know, pretty clever.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like we have like a couple episodes left, and then all of a sudden like the whole season's done. So
Are the old episodes on Netflix too?
I have no, there's 20 episodes.
There's 20 and that's it?
Yeah. I mean, I think we did like 17 already or something. So I'm not really sure what number we're on, but man, I'm all like, and then the other thing too, like all the cars, they're not his cars. He gets them like from museums, or he gets them from other collections.
Oh, wow.
And drives them around. Yeah. And he got, but in the first season, did he get caught driving a Lamborghini by the police?
I didn't see all the episodes in the first season, but
okay, spoiler alert.
I heard something like that. You know.
Yeah. So it probably is.
Maybe he ran out of cars.
Oh, I don't know.
He ran out of cars to do it with, because I don't think Jay Leno would run out of cars. Jay Leno has cars for days.
No, but it's the first episode on, it's been like some donated car.
Huh.
Yeah. Apparently they're not his cars, I guess. I don't know. Whatever. But anyway, so what do we have tonight?
Cool. So since it's the last one of our first season, I chalked the slate full of a bunch of trailers. I think I picked a couple that I think you would really like. a couple that I'd really like, that sure. I'd like, and then we'll see what shakes out in the mix. See if I'm right on what I think you would like.
Sounds good. So first is The Hate U Give.
The Hate U Give. So The Hate U Give is a 20th Century Fox film, and the agency that produced this trailer is called Transit. So that's kind of one of the little things that since we started this, I've been digging, and I found a great source to find out the agencies or the editors or the people that have cut these trailers that we're watching. And you'd be surprised at like the how small the town is, because there's not that much variety. There's, you know, there's a handful, you know, 10, 15 or so. But you'll see that, well, you'll see next season as we get into it, that a lot of these agencies get repeated and used over and over again.
Right, but right.
For this one, so Transit was it. And this is one I picked that I thought you would really like.
Yeah, I'm totally into it. Just yesterday, a matter of fact, I was listening to a podcast. Well, I guess it's a podcast that I listen to about Transit.
Uh-huh.
And so it's the Streets Blog podcast. Uh-huh. I don't know if you know what Streets Blog is.
No.
But anyway, it's about like transit and like building better cities, and I kind of nerd out on that because maybe I ride my bike everywhere. But so what they did, this woman Tamika Butler, she's from the LA Bicycle Coalition.
Uh-huh.
And she's like this black gay woman, and so she gave this really powerful talk. It was like some city planning commission that, you know, annual convention, whatever, in Seattle. This is like a few years ago. And it was like it was about all this stuff, right? So it made you really think a lot about like all the stories of black kids getting shot by police and how the design of our cities and our neighborhoods and how society is like systematically created less opportunity for different segments of society and all this mm-hmm. stuff. And, you know, with this movie, it kind of puts that right in your face. And one of the things I see coming from it, too, is like, you know how people of privilege, right? So most people in the United States are Christian and Christmas. But yet if anybody, someone Jewish or someone, you know, whatever, right, you want to squeeze in just a little bit of your like religion, your religious holiday at that time of year, all of a sudden it's a war on Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, or I don't know, any of that kind of stuff. Right. So with this, I could totally see like this movie is going to turn off like white people because it's going to position itself in a place of like a war on white people or something, you know?
You think so?
I think so. Yeah. Huh. I think people of privilege are too threatened by anybody like squeezing an ounce of something in front of them, you know, like, I mean, you know, whatever it is. So that's kind of where I see that like this thing falling. And mm-hmm. initially I wasn't really sure what to take from it. You know, it seemed a little bit boring in the beginning,
right?
You know, just a couple of kids going on a date. I didn't even know where it was kind of heading. And, well, one thing leads to another, you know?
Yeah.
And then it's like, and now for the angry political side of the story, right? You know, where yeah. the kid gets shot, and then it's like all the stuff we know about like Black Lives Matter and all that kind of stuff, you know, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a trailer in three parts.
Uh-huh.
And like we've said many times in the past, there's some bait and switch that goes on. But this one does it very systematically. I thought it was great to have that little driving scene at the top. You know, it's a trailer to the trailer, but it's its own entity. It's its own thing. It's not preparing you for what's next. It's actually kind of misdirecting you from what it is. Then we go into the second part of the trailer, and the second part of the trailer is this beautiful kind of that voiceover literary setup of the story of the book that this is based on. You know, you don't go to high school because high school is where you go to get drugs or get pregnant and stuff like that. Yeah. But you go to this, you know, this prep school that you don't even call a school. You call it by its name. And like we talked about with, you know, Denzel's kids, you know, you call it, you know, Campbell Hall, you call it Harvard Westlake, you know, they're schools in LA that are so high society, like you said, that they transcend being called schools. You know, it's really just about like your new shoes and being a part of that world. And I love the way that they do the lighting throughout this movie. It feels like, you know, there is this whitewash of the lighting when she's in school where she's lit in such a way that she looks, you know, like a fair-skinned black girl. And I think that it's a telling part of this storytelling that this director didn't get to necessarily key in on his other films, you know, like Barbershop and things like that. You know what I mean? He's kind of had like this other, you know, kind of normal pace. And he I think he was given a lot to work with this story. And then it shifts even after that into the nightlife. And when she, you know, gets to be who she feels like she is, you know, it feels like she lives a lie in this school because of the wealth of her family. And then when the nightlife turns on, she sees her friends from the block and, you know, and she gets to, you know, have fun in the way that she thinks is right for her, you know? And of course that leads to this great, you know, tragedy of violence. But rather than, you know, living in that moment of violence, it really talks about this aftermath and a way of handling something that is tragic, but it's removed from the typical grief and justice and stuff like that. And it's really like about her. And as I did the research for this trailer and this film, you know, found out that it was based on a best-selling young adult novel. And The Hate U Give is actually an acronym, or half of the acronym, for the tattoo on Tupac's body that said Thug Life. So the thug in that stands for The Hate U Give. And actually, you know, in this couple of articles that I was reading, there was a lot of Tupac symbolism that was, you know, woven through the story and through like Tupac's songs and Tupac's poetry. And I just thought it's a beautiful kind of homage to, you know, another person taken too soon, you know, through gun violence. And, you know, everybody loves to talk about the salaciousness of the conspiracy behind Tupac's death and Biggie's death. But, you know, we don't talk about the art and the beauty that we missed from having him taken too soon, you know?
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you too about, with the acronym, the love you hate, the thug kind of fades into the love you hate.
Right.
And I mean, what's your opinion of that as far as the implications of thug and then black kids getting shot by police and things like that? I mean, because I mean, it's implied to me that the way the news media or people that I talk to and stuff, you know, who pretty much most of them are white, I'd say, and oh yeah, you know, they're thugs, they deserve it or whatever, right? You know, and that's how people, and I have the fear that it's almost like a self-serving prophecy of why then someone gets killed or whatever, you know what I mean?
I don't know.
Like, in other words, somebody, you know, middle America, middle white America goes to the movie and watches this, or maybe they even see the trailer, and then they're going to be like, well, that's why I got killed, because he's a thug. You know what I mean?
You think so?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, man.
Hey, I come from the you know, racist South Side neighbor of Chicago. I mean, come on now. I know how people think. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I mean, I can't speak to it. I feel, you know, I'm from coast to coast, so I don't have a reference for that.
But yeah, I saw that and I was, you know, my initial thought was, why would they do that? That's just going to like feed the fire, you know? But I don't know. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it happens seemingly every week, you know, multiple times a week. So I think, you know, it needs to be memorialized in art, you know?
Yeah.
It's part of what's happening right now, and it's happening at an alarming rate.
Oh, most definitely. And then, you know, I think overall the story needs to sell itself on two points, I think. the number one point is the underlying anger that black people have for how they're treated in society, you know, mm-hmm. and justifying that. And then I think the other is kind of the forced oppression, I guess, that they have. What I mean by forced oppression is oppressing feelings of that anger to have a smile when you're in society, right?
Yeah.
So in other words, you know, you're at the bank or whatever, you're at the grocery store, and maybe somebody sees you and it's like, instead of just like, you know, kind of that white privilege coming in again, right?
Right.
You see them and it's like, hey, can you tell me where, like, which aisle the coffee's in? You know, it's like, I don't work here. You know, I'm just here shopping like you, you know? So they have to oppress that anger that they have and kind of do it in such a way that it adequately addresses the white privilege that's causing all of the scenarios that kind of happen to where people get shot by the police and all this, right?
Right.
So I think if they sell those two things, the white privilege side and the anger that's being oppressed, that's when this movie is going to be successful, I think.
Yeah. And I think that's why that middle part of this trailer is so crucial, because it's the suppression of herself, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's what you're talking about, right? Like she has to
walk down the hall of the school with a smile.
But she's not angry. She feels like she's living a lie. You know, by
exactly
by caring about the shoes and not, you know, not being with her real friends. She's with her school high society friends, you know.
Yeah. And then she becomes angry, though, as after her friend gets killed and everything, you know. I mean,
yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, it looks extremely powerful. You know, and like I said, just yesterday, I was listening to a talk about this exact topic.
Mm-hmm.
And what that woman was talking about, I mean, eye-opening in a lot of ways. Some of this stuff, you know, you kind of learn when you go to college and whatever, but like, you never really like think about it or internalize it or, you know, comprehend it in such a way, but until somebody expresses it in a way that really helps you comprehend it best.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe we could put that link in the show notes, because I think it was about 50 minutes or something. It was a little bit long, but.
Oh, we'll definitely put it in there.
And even if it's just listening in the car and stuff, I think it's good that people, you know, kind of hear the message. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of a hot button issue, I think, on all sides.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it's these kind of things, I don't know, they're not always easy to talk about. So you just talk about it, you know?
I think so. And I didn't think, you know, when I first saw it on its face, I didn't think too deeply about, I guess when I saw the title, I didn't know the novel it was based on. So,
right.
You know, it caught me completely off guard.
Oh, I wasn't expecting, especially when the first, I don't know, third of the trailer, you don't expect it to turn the way it did.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, that's about all I have for this one.
Cool. So are you guessing?
Yeah, but I already kind of said it, though. Black Lives Matter.
Oh, okay. Well, I've actually reassessed my three word reviews and you know, become very introspective. And I thought the three word reviews should really be more about the trailers and not so much about the broader things. But you know, I live in the broad, so yeah. it always gravitates back towards that. But I will try to stay in the trailers. This one, it was too powerful to stay in that. So there was an article that I had referenced before about how it's based on the Tupac. And I think there is a poem in the book about roses growing in concrete and how to grow up in the situation that Tupac grew up in. You had to be a concrete grown rose. So that's my three word review for The Hate You Give.
Concrete grown rose?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. All right, moving on to Zoe.
So Zoe is a movie coming out from Amazon Studios. So I think there is a theatrical release, but it will be quickly windowed into Amazon streaming, and it was made by Amazon. This trailer was edited by DJ Funari. because Amazon is kind of a, I think they're kind of a scrappier player in this media space. Mm-hmm. They don't always have publicly available who the agency is that did it. And sometimes with the smaller studios, you can just go off to an editor and have an editor do that. So maybe this editor was working with a little less overhead and he was able to produce this for them.
Yeah, and it's a timely movie. I mean, with so much talk about AI, autonomous vehicles, and, you know, but I wonder if he can pass the Turing test. Or the Turing test, whatever.
The Turing test, yes. Well, I think, you know, I can't give spoilers because I didn't see it, but I can give predictions. Yeah. You know? Do you have a prediction about what's going on in this trailer? I think the trailer maybe the trailer gives too much away. Maybe the trailer has a spoiler in it a bit.
Okay.
But I think that the trailer turns on this moment. And I think it's a spoiler, but I think the spoiler doesn't necessarily matter. When we go through, we find out that, you know, they're doing this match.com thing where they're assessing people's compatibilities, right?
Yeah.
And they put them into this system and the computer says you're a 75% match, you know. So congratulations. And then they take that learning and put it into this dude, right? This what do they call him?
A cyborg?
What was it? It wasn't a cyborg. Synthetic?
So I wonder what the skin is like on it, though. Like, does he sweat? Does he – oh, wait. I just thought of something.
Yeah.
This is how the Terminators became so successful, because they had that, like, rubberized skin and were easy to spot.
Uh-huh.
And then they got the real skin that looked and smelled like humans and everything. And then that's when they had to get the dogs and to find them in the Terminator.
Right.
Whoa.
So this is a prequel to Terminator.
It is. And oh boy, we're in for it.
So it's really about the time that she falls in love with the Ewan McGregor character, right? It's about her falling in love with Ewan McGregor.
Yeah.
And then it kind of becomes like a love triangle. But there's that moment when she basically opens Pandora's box and asks the computer to do a compatibility test on herself and Ewan McGregor's character, right?
Yeah.
And it comes up 0%, right?
Yeah.
So that's like a Rotten Tomatoes score, 0%. It had to be fixed like the Gotti movie, right? Did you hear about that?
No.
Well, apparently MoviePass is involved in some conspiracy or something happened to the Gotti movie where it got 0% in Rotten Tomatoes. And it was a computer malfunction that MoviePass was involved in or supposedly involved in. And everybody's like crying foul and stuff. And everybody agrees.
So did the mafia put a hit on the on the coder who made the algorithm?
No, AMC is going to put a hit on MoviePass with their own A-list service where for $20 a month, you can see 3 movies a week. But that's neither here nor there. So I believe that 0% means that she's a synthetic too, but she didn't know it.
Oh, yeah.
So that sets up your love triangle where, you know, when she's saying the thing to the synthetic, to Ash, she says, well, you're a synthetic. You don't love the way that humans love. And he's like, well, I've been trained. I can do it better than humans can do it, you know?
Yeah.
And she's saying it from this perspective of herself as a human. But if, you know, if it turns out that she's not human, then it sets up this awful lie to basically drive a wedge between her and Ewan McGregor. So that's my thought. And then, so the two synthetics, you know, go off to make their perfect union together because they're both synthetics that are, you know, built off of the same AI that perfectly completes one another. And of course, as the third wheel, the scientist who created these machines, Cole, I guess is Ewan McGregor's character, he is now left out in the cold. And then, of course, when you get left out in the cold, that's when you find out that you really are in love with whomever, you know?
Ewan McGregor, then, what you're saying is created her as, like, his own love interest?
I think so. Like a first version.
Yeah.
And then like, something was wrong or, you know, like, you would need a synthetic man and a synthetic woman because of, you know, personal preference. And then, you know, if you're going to mass produce these things, those are the two models you'd need. You know, you would need a man and a woman.
Well, you look at that. You just saved me a bunch of money.
Well, I could be wrong, but I'll watch it for you and then we'll see.
My prediction of your three-word review then kind of falls in line with that a little bit.
Okay.
Skin job heartbreak.
I had a, like, love story or something like that, but I went with Machina meets her.
Machina meets her?
Meets her. Because Ex Machina, that movie, the kind of a horror movie.
Okay.
And then Her is the movie with the where, you know, Joaquin Phoenix falls in love with his phone, the operating system of his phone, and he talks to Scarlett Johansson through the whole movie.
Yeah.
In his phone. So it's like when a man falls in love with a machine, and Ex Machina didn't really know she was a machine. So I think it's part of my prediction of the spoiler, as well as, you know, the blend of these two movies.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I like the well, I don't know if I want to call it a spoiler. I mean, but I like your prediction theory. Of what your theory of how the movie's going to play out, though. I mean, I think it's – if it plays out anything other than that, I think that would be a good twist at the end. And if it plays out anything other, then I think it's a disappointment. Yeah. I mean, after Skin Job Heartbreak, I don't have anything else. How about you?
I'm good.
All right. So Predator.
Predator 2018.
Ted stacked a deck tonight, so Predators are third in the lineup. So it's like Predator Reimagined.
Yes, it's a reboot.
A reboot.
One of the actors from the original Predator is now the writer of this, and I think he directed it as well. I'll double check that. But yeah, Shane Black is back. Uh-oh, I think I gave away one of my I have two three-word reviews for this one. So I gave away the first one. It's called Back in Black. That's my one of
Back
my three
in Black.
Word reviews.
Okay. That's not what I was going to predict.
Oh, good, cuz I have another one that I'll save to the end.
Okay.
But yeah, I love this look into Predator. I love the idea of an uber predator, you know, a supersized and evolved predator.
Yeah. Okay. Let's stop there for 1 second, because I wanted to ask you about that. So it's kind of like the big, gigantic predator, like, easily takes out the smaller predator.
Of course.
But I almost had the impression that, like, scientists or something, like, evolved this predator to become, like, super predator in, like, their own defense against the predators. Because when he said something, I don't remember which character it was, but he said predators, they took over the universe. And then he kind of, like, points to his head as if, like, but we're smarter.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
As if to say, like, and then they showed, like, the big predator come later, like, yeah, we got this guy and we created him to beat the predators because we're smarter than the predators.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the symptoms are worse than the cure. The cure is worse than the disease, you know? It's like everything.
Yeah, you know, it's like the ultimate predator, right. You know? And it's like, what the heck is that thing? I mean, it was huge. The original Predator is, like, one of my favorite movies from that time. I mean, I was, like, I was in high school at the time. It was, like, right in my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
It put together, you know, well, of course, Schwarzenegger. But then you had Carl Weathers, you know, and I mean, it was just awesome. And the only question even the thing they even kind of have a nod to the original with the mom's vagina jokes, you know, because they were doing that in the original one, and then they're doing it now, and you know, I mean, I thought that
it was an update of it. Did you notice it was like
yeah, it was hilarious. Refresh my memory though. Why is the Predator's helmet so important to him?
It's just protection. I have no idea.
Because he could survive without it. I mean, he doesn't need it to breathe or anything.
He doesn't need it to breathe. It's just like, you know, just protection. I think it helps him see. I think there is some vision. Like,
he has that heat vision.
His vision's not very good, but with the helmet, he has a better view of the heat.
Right. Yeah. I'll go with that. Yeah, I'll buy that one.
Do you know what's going on in the when they're chained up in the bus? During that time that they do the, you know, your mom would be ready to eat for everyone.
Yeah,
joke,
yeah, yeah.
I'm completely at a loss as to who they are and what they're trying to get out of. You know, it's some kind of military jail prison bus, you know what I mean? But I don't understand who they're trying to kill and why they're trying to kill them and or how they're trying to get out or who they are, you know? So I think there's
maybe it's a Dirty Dozen take. Oh. Like they're military prisoners and, you know, they like the one guy said, I was a ranger and all this stuff, you know, and they're just these awful, mean guys who found their way into the military and did bad things and now they're in prison. That's kind of my take on it. I don't know. And then all of a sudden, like, well, who are we going to get to stop the guy? Well, we got to get, like, the baddest guys we know, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. That was, like, the A-team or something.
And even all that block lettering is very A-team and Predator, the original Predator, you know, it's reminiscent of that.
But, yeah, I had the feeling it was something along, like, these guys were – you know, I forget what the A-team was. They were banished for some reason, but
for crimes they did not commit. Come on.
Yeah, okay, that's right. But no, I had a feeling it was something along those lines, and then they were being like sold up the river for something until like all hell breaks loose, you know, but I don't know. That's just my speculation.
What do you think about the name on this? It's just called the Predator. It doesn't have any kind of lineage.
Yeah, I mean, Predator was like already done and now they have the Predator, and maybe the Predator is like the big Predator.
The definite article over just Predator. That's the difference is the.
But what I'm saying is though, the is maybe definitive of the big bad Predator who beats up the smaller Predator.
Uh-huh.
Like he's the Predator. Maybe it's not even the Predator, it's the Predator.
The Predator.
That's the best I got.
Yeah.
So
no, that's pretty good.
I didn't really think too much into that, so I didn't really research it. But no, I mean, I think it looks like an awesome movie. That's because, you know, like I said, I always enjoyed the Predator. Well, the original Predator.
You enjoyed Predator.
I enjoyed Predator, right. And it
was. Did you like the Aliens crossover?
Aliens versus Predator?
Yeah.
I saw it once. Like, when did that come out? Like 2000.
I think there were a couple of them. I think they did it a couple times.
I saw one of them. I think 2008 or something off the top of my head, but it maybe was even sooner. I don't remember much about it, but I didn't really care for it. Personally, I like movies that are true to the character itself. Like, you know, what was the one Batman versus Superman or whatever and stuff? Like, yeah, those things don't really do it for me. Like, I almost feel like Freddy versus Jason. Yeah, I almost feel like the story needs to, or not the story. I almost feel like the character needs to live in that character's world.
Uh-huh.
And that character is in that world and no other crazy characters are in that world. You know, I mean, the Marvel universe is one thing, I guess. But
you caught me. I was gonna spring.
Yeah, but I mean, or like, what's the other one? The X-Men and stuff. I mean, there's all these characters, but like, I feel like, you know, mutants are kind of mutants, and even in the Marvel universe, you kind of have the same thing. I would say, but I think once you, it may be DC Comics gets there, but I think when you have like these crazy aliens and stuff, like the whole story is told within the context of like that time in history where they were exploring space and found aliens.
Right.
You know, not that like, oh, well, we found the alien, so let's now bring him back here and fight this Predator. And like, I don't know. To me, it's too much. It's too much. Yeah.
It's like a crazy soup.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot to mention, because it's kind of the new info part of what we do, or what I do as far as my research. So this was 20th Century Fox, just like The Hate U Give, which is crazy because obviously two very different movies, but one production company, and one production company that's still I think they've set the date for the end of this month to vote. The board's going to vote on whether to accept the Disney bid. I saw that breaking in the news today. So from a week from now, you know, will be old news. But the agency on this is a wild card. And this kind of hits the space of where I was talking about. Wildcard is a big player in the trailer space. So they do a lot of trailers. And as we go into next season, we'll see their name a lot.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. All right. So my prediction of your three-word review.
Uh-huh.
I see you.
What?
You know, when Bill Duke saw the Predator and he was telling Carl Weathers about
it. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's cool. That's cool. Yeah. That's a nice throwback.
Yeah. So I thought that was cool because, like, I love that movie. I'm probably going to see this movie. And then, like, you can't really see him, but, like, in the whole movie, you see him.
Yeah. No, it's.
He's not cloaked.
He's not cloaked. He doesn't have his stuff on. So, yeah, that's a great one. I love it.
Yeah.
It's not my three-word review, but I do like it. My three-word review, and again, you know, I try to stay in the box, the new box that I've drawn for myself, but I can't. It's Most Lethal Weapon.
Most Lethal Weapon.
Yes.
You're talking about the big Predator.
I'm talking about the big Predator, but yeah, it's a double entendre because Shane Black wrote Lethal Weapon.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. I didn't know that.
And Lethal Weapon was one of the first million-dollar scripts. So when Shane Black got paid, he got paid handsomely for Lethal Weapon, and he opened the floodgates for writers to get paid north of $1 million for these big-budget action movies.
See, and that's why I can't predict your three-word reviews. Because you get so nuanced, and mine are like so matter of fact to the actual trailer we're watching, right? And you go nuanced down into like who the writers are and like how much the guy gets paid. It's like, okay, sure, you win.
Oh, if only I was as much of a film nerd as so many of the people that I talk to.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Okay, a beautiful boy.
Beautiful Boy. Right. Man. We're not adding articles to this. The articles in all these movies are very important. Not The Beautiful Boy.
It's not The Beautiful Boy. It's just Beautiful Boy.
So again, we have another Amazon Studio film. And again, they just went with an editor, Mark Woolen. Like, you know, saving overhead because Amazon likes saving money. So they pay for the editor. They don't pay for the whole agency. They're not buying, you know, cappuccino machines for agencies. They're just getting the editor working out of wherever, you know, rented bay space. But this is the movie that I thought of all the movies we did this week would be your sweet spot.
Oh, man. So, yeah, Steve Carell is really stretching his acting ability for sure.
Last week?
Yeah. I mean, he's moved beyond the crazy office manager. But man, this one really tugged at me, you know, on a few levels. Obviously, because like when they were showing the little boy in the airport and stuff, I mean, that's the kid that's like my kid's age right now.
Right, right.
And then like you project forward, you're like, man, what's going to happen to my kid when he's like a young adult? And yeah, I mean, it tore at me. I mean, I was welling up with tears and stuff. It was heavy.
It's a heavy, heavy trailer.
Oh, it's what trailers should be. I mean, I don't even know if I could watch it. You know, it's like, it's so intense.
I mean, just that diner scene alone, the nuance that they let play out in a trailer is it's amazing to me. They just let the whole scene just plays out in a trailer.
Yeah, exactly. And moving into our next movie of Mission Impossible, like jump cut after jump cut, explode. You know, it's like that's just all action all the time, you know?
Right.
Where this was so like, and I don't want to say slow in like a negative connotation, but slow in the sense that they just slowed it down so you can absorb it all.
Yeah, you couldn't be more different than Beautiful Boy going into Mission Impossible Fallout. That's why I put those two back to back in our lineup tonight. It's literally like when the pitcher comes up and he's the last in the lineup, and then you go to the top of the lineup, be around the, you know, it's almost that different.
Yeah, so super heavy. Like I said, you know, I have little boys, and you know, you're projecting into the future of what may or may not become of them. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, I've been in meetings, you know, in high school and stuff, where you see like some 16, 17 year old kid who good student, played sports, all that kind of stuff. Within 6 months, you know, we're sitting in a meeting, we're sending him to Utah to some like
detox.
Yeah, like a detox therapeutic center, whatever it is. And like his dad's like some big burly concrete construction worker who's just like
crying in your office, yeah,
you know, bawling his eyes out, you know, and because of whatever happened to his kid, and it all goes south so quickly, you know what I mean? And you know, the parents are just like, what the heck just happened? Because like, he was like this awesome kid I took camping, and now he's a drug addict.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, and like, I've seen all sides of it, you know,
that scene in the diner, I mean, it's so powerful for so many reasons, but just the way that he, as a father, is just walking on eggshells and just trying to, you know, reconnect to his son. It's just, it's impossible to not, you know, I guess as fathers, it's impossible to not try, not to have a connection and to put yourself in his shoes. And then you hear the son like rebuffing him after what is seemingly this inconsequential, you know, caring steps. It's like, it's just heart-wrenching.
Oh, it's totally heart-wrenching. And the inner turmoil that Steve Carell's character must feel. I can't imagine what that must be like, you know, like to have your kid just reject you after like you've invested like so much of you into them over the years, you know, and then they're just like, nah, get out of here. Like,
right.
it was your whole life trying to like be projected onto me. I reject it right back at you. You know, that was just incredible. But yeah, I mean, overall, you know, it was just every scene, and when they would reflect back as the boy was aging, and they would show like, you know, when he was sitting there kind of like just rubbing his hair when he was probably like 10-ish. And then again, when he was like 18 or 19, whatever he was. And I mean, just those scenes, those jump cuts back and forth, it's unbelievable. Like, man, it tugged at me hard.
Yeah, I think when I watch this and that Legacy Cards comes up with the producers of Moonlight, I literally like turned to Anne and I said, we have Moonlight. We have a screener of Moonlight. Why haven't we watched Moonlight? You know, and I think it's one of those movies that, you know, it's really, really good, but you know that it's going to put you in a place that you have to be prepared to watch it. Then you have to watch it like one time, and then you can probably never watch it again because it's so powerful and so moving and so emotionally, you know, it drags your emotion through the mud and like doesn't let you off the hook as an audience.
And that's how I feel about Beautiful Boy right there. I mean, like, if I watch it, I'd like to. I don't know if I have the strength to be honest with you. Right? But I'd like to. And like you said, like, you watch it, you're done, and it's going to sit with you for a good long time, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I don't have much more else to say other than, you know, there was a bike scene. But yeah, it was like, you know, I tried to come up with something, you know, witty and humor and stuff, but the movie just doesn't lend it.
Even the trailer drains you.
Well, yeah, I should say the trailer. The trailer doesn't lend itself to that. So, you know, pretty much my prediction is Fathers and Sons.
Ah, close. So I have one that's called The Powerful Dramatic Duo, because I think these two actors are at the top of their game, and I don't see how this is one of those things where we're kind of in the ordinary people space where the main character might end up getting a supporting, you know, supporting actor Academy, you know, because the Academy doesn't know what's going on. And
But
I think both of these characters probably, both these actors probably deserve, you know, a nomination for sure. And they carry their nominations from the previous films, you know, very hard in this trailer. Because I didn't like the blandness of powerfully dramatic duo, I had Nom 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 because
Nom Nom Nom
because they're both nominated for Academy Awards, and Maura Tierney is also, she was an Academy Golden Globe Award nominee.
Yeah.
So Nom Nom Nom, of course, it's like something that's delicious, so you eat it up. This isn't necessarily that, but I thought it is a very filling kind of trailer, so that's what I thought.
But yeah, no, just overall impression is just, yeah, I mean, emotionally heavy, and you got to be prepared going into it, just knowing you're going to come out on the other end just
wrecked.
Well, and hopefully there's a reconciliation, but it almost seems like it's just going to end with them going their own way or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, jumping into Mission Impossible.
Should we take a little break before Mission Impossible?
We got a couple more to go, so we're right in the middle. It's not a bad idea.
All right.
Coming up on Trailer Junkies Podcast, beautiful boy. Whew. Got to be in the right mindset.
Right mindset.
Yeah, I'd like to watch it. I don't know. I might need a box of tissue. and I know we've talked about that in the past, but man, when you bring in like I don't care what the movie is, like I don't really cry about much. But man, all of a sudden like my little boys are involved. Man, like forget about it. Like, you know, it's like you love those little guys so much, you know, like, I mean, how can you not feel anything? Like, how can you not put yourself in Steve Carell's situation, you know?
Yeah.
If you enjoy our trailer reviews, or even if you hate them, let us know. We love feedback. We're on Twitter at @TJunkiesPodcast and Instagram at @TrailerJunkiesPodcast. You can also comment on the episodes at TrailerJunkiesPodcast.com. Our email is info@trailerjunkiespodcast.com, and you could also leave us a review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's get back to it. All right, Mission Impossible Fallout.
Mission Impossible Fallout. So I did not notice until this movie that the colon for Mission Impossible movies goes between mission and impossible. Did you notice that?
You know what's funny? Coming up with my three-word review prediction, I did notice that, and I never noticed it before because I was like, why is there a colon there? That's kind of ruining what I'm trying to do here.
This is our only trailer that has a trailer to the trailer, but I figured let's have one. It's the last show of the season. We gotta bitch a little bit about the trailer to the trailer.
Yeah, you know, I saw it, and I didn't really mind it that much because, you know, okay, it pops up and then you're sitting there and here comes like the helicopter rolling down the mountain and you go through the trailer. But I didn't really mind it only because by the time we got to the point in the trailer, it was the very last scene.
Yeah, so much had happened.
So much had happened, I forgot about it. So then when it went through, I was like, oh, there's the trailer to the trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it wasn't too bad.
It doesn't. So we've come up with rules for trailer to trailer, right?
Yeah.
Don't do something that's going to happen very soon in the body of the trailer, right? Don't do a lot of the stuff that's going to happen at the first half or the first third of your trailer.
Yeah, it's too redundant, right? In that when you do it like that.
And then try to stay away from dialogue, especially linchpin dialogue or expositional dialogue, which, you know, even if you have to cheat stuff, let's cheat stuff to stay away from that, because that is like takes you out of it in three different ways. It takes you out of the whole trailer in many different ways, on many layers, because when you hear something, especially in VO or separated from the people speaking on screen, it's a different part of your brain that processes it, because it's omniscient. You know, it's an omniscient voice.
Right. Yeah.
So That those are our rules for the trailer to trailer. And then the worst thing you could do is to put up a card saying, watch this till the end, which, you know, I hated on the Nun trailer.
That was awful.
So, yeah. So I like this trailer. This is a movie by Paramount Pictures. And I'm very happy to say the agency for this one is AV Squad. So hello, AV Squad. I love those guys over there. I work with them. So I was glad to see them in this. I know that they've done a lot of the trailers that we covered over this first season, but happy to point it out when they do and show you how many trailers they cover. Between Wildcard, AV Squad, and Trailer Park, those and Buddha Jones, those are some of the big players in the trailer agency space that I've worked with that, you know, that are fun to talk about. So that's what I'll bring into next season.
One of the complaints I have about Mission Impossible type movies, I mean, obviously it's Mission Impossible, so you're expecting like, well, something impossible, like nobody could do it, but you got to have like Tom Cruise to pull it off.
Right.
But these guys fight so hard and hit each other so hard that like they throw each other through walls and columns and they keep coming out and they keep fighting and they keep, you know, and like it, they just don't stop, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the other day I'm walking with 2 5-gallon buckets of water and I sneezed and I threw my back out for a week. Well, whatever. Like I can't imagine getting pummeled so hard and just being there like barely with a scrape on you.
Yeah.
It doesn't jive with me.
So it's unbelievable.
And then again, you know, we talk about this a number of times too when you look at movies. So Mission Impossible, like every mission is more impossible than the next mission. So how do you go bigger in order to top the last iteration of Mission Impossible? I mean, the only thing you can really do is just more action and put them in situations that are more precarious and life-threatening, thinking there's no way he's going to get out of it. But of course, it's like, you know, it'll be 30 minutes into the movie, so of course he's going to get out of it because the movie's not over yet.
Yeah, I think the way you top it is you put Henry Cavill with the mustache, and the mustache kind of takes over the whole trailer. Like when you see that mustache, it doesn't matter what's being broken down because this is the mustache that destroyed the Justice League movie. Did you hear about that? Yeah.
No, I didn't.
He had to do the reshoots for the Justice League, you know, as Superman, and he had this mustache for this role, and apparently he didn't want to shave it, so they had to digitally remove his mustache from the reshoots of Justice League.
Now you threw me off with the mustache. I was going to say something. So what do you think the premise is in this, that they talk about nuclear attack and they're looking at the guy played by Sean Harris? What's his name? Solomon Lane, I guess.
Yeah.
He's like the protagonist.
The antagonist. Yeah.
Or, I'm sorry, the antagonist. I always get that mixed up. But he's the antagonist and he appears to be like the guy who he seems to be.
He's the mastermind.
Yeah, he seems to be like the intellectual guy, not like the physical guy. Right.
It's a Bond rip, right? It's like a Bond ripoff.
But what I was getting at, though, was so if you have this guy, Solomon Lane, and he's the guy that the mastermind they're trying to get at and everything.
Right.
Are they trying to stop a nuclear holocaust? That's kind of what I get out of the premise of the movie or of the trailer. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, I think so. It's also unclear how the CIA or is trying to be, you know, they send in Henry Cavill to be the muscle, you know, like to just take everybody out, you know, and it's, I don't know, it feels weird to have this triumvirate of like Mission Impossible folks over here, CIA folks over here, and the bad guys over here. And it's, you know, it's cutting off your nose despite your face kind of thing.
You know, but I got to say, I've always enjoyed these kind of movies because you watch them, whether it's at the theater, at home, whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're fun. You go into it, like, they're kind of like a less believable Jason Bourne type movie.
Yeah.
But you go into it, you know, knowing it's going to be just ridiculous action that nobody could pull off. Nobody could ever survive the fights they get into and, you know, not getting shot ever with so much ammo flying around, so many bullets flying around.
And you know, Tom Cruise, he wants them to re-reel bullets. And I think the production company just lies to him and they say, yeah, we're using live rounds, Tom. I know you want everything to be so realistic that we have to use live rounds around you.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, the bottom line is it's going to be a fun movie. I'll probably watch it because I always get in, you know, I like these kind of movies. Mm-hmm. Turn up the subwoofer so the house explodes. Whatever. It's
wake up the neighbors.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's all around good time, and I don't think you can go into it expecting anything beyond that.
Yeah.
So, all right, my prediction.
Here we go.
It's impossible mission.
It's impossible mission.
That's where I got screwed up with a colon. I'm like, why is it
right. there, why a, is colon, there a colon dude? There? And then there should be, I mean, mission, colon, impossible, technically is right, but then... Shouldn't there be another, I don't know, do you put another colon before Fallout or another colon before Ghost Protocol? You know, I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we're overthinking it.
Okay, good. It was not that. Mine was classic blockbuster villainy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, I mean, and this is the first time that, you know, we already know that I think it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek portrayal of this villain where we get, you know, everybody's always... making fun of the Bond villain because before I kill you, I'm going to tell you exactly what I'm going to do, you know?
Right.
And in this one, before I show you the movie, I'm going to tell you exactly what I'm going to do. So immediately after the trailer, we have this, you know, the voiceover of...
Oh, you're talking about Sean Harris?
Yeah. And he basically gives the whole, you know, plot of what we're going to be fighting for the whole movie, or what Tom Cruise is going to be fighting against the whole movie.
I know, brilliant.
And then it's all there for us to not be concerned about.
All right, Assassination Nation.
I saw this one at the dentist office while I was waiting to go into the dentist. I saw the trailer at the dentist office, and I was in a room, a waiting room full of people, and then as it started to, you know, I played it in the room because it didn't really matter, you know, but there were a couple of older people in the room and I was like, uh-oh, as it started to get into it, I was like, I went outside to watch the rest of it. And it doesn't, like, audibly, it isn't as disturbing as it is visually, which I thought was strange, but it does have some crazy, crazy stuff in it. So I don't know how I feel about this movie. I don't know whether I'm going to see this, you know, like if you want to talk about of all the movies we've seen today or talked about today, this is probably my least favorite, but I'm intrigued by the premise.
I think it's similar to The Hate U Give. Hmm. So The Hate U Give I see as one story that plays out, you know, a narrow story a narrow story in scope of this black kid getting shot by the police and so on. With Assassination Nation, what I see is more a broader story, kind of about the same type of topics and concept, right? Mm-hmm. So in other words, like maybe a story about bullies and an imbalance of power, but I kind of get like the feel that the people who have the most power feel the most threatened by losing their power. Or to lose their power, right? So if you look at, you know, somewhere in the trailer, people were saying like, you know, oh yeah, you know, the fear of the oppressed white guy or something, or however they worded it. I don't quite remember, but.
Fragile male egos.
Yeah, fragile male egos. There you go. And it's like, they have all the power, but so why are they so fragile? If you think about it.
Yeah.
And again, it goes back to what I was talking about with like, the war on Christmas, the war on cars, the war on whatever, who's ever ruled by the de facto power, right? Mm-hmm. Like so many people, the majority is so enormous that for anybody to squeeze a little bit of space out of whatever the majority has, like the majority feels so threatened as if whatever they have is going to be taken away forever when that's probably like impossible. but people in the minority just want a small slice of the pie, no matter how small it is. But then all of a sudden, like, but the war is against the people who have, like, everything, you know? And that's kind of the feel I had of this, because they kept showing the different scenarios that play out in our society and the people who are threatened by whatever that particular scenario is.
Yeah, I think maybe it's the inclusion of the giant frogs, but I had, like, yeah, a conception that this is like a millennial Magnolia, you know, like a lot of disparate stories loosely woven together around a town or a geographical space, and then executed into one movie loosely with very loose cohesion.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I meant when I said The Hate U Give is like a narrow,
right,
a narrow story about one of these things in Assassination Nation, right? Mm-hmm. So then you're right. There's all these disparate scenarios, concepts, whatever, philosophical topics. Mm-hmm. And that's why I was saying I think they're all kind of interwoven and connected through, like, just an imbalance of power. But typically an imbalance of power is what bullying is, right? So yeah, if you take a bully, they're the ones with the power and everything, but yet the people who feel bullied are the ones who have all the power, and they feel bullied by the people who have very little power trying to just take a little bit from them, you know, and maybe not even taking, just trying to squeeze somewhere into their world. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think, you know, I think that's part of the problem is that the people on the top see the rise of the people at the bottom as a zero-sum action. So they right. think that, you know, rather than rising all boats, their wealth has to come from my loss of wealth.
Yeah, exactly. You exactly. know?
So I think that's a misnomer that's been sold to the uber rich that isn't actually the case. I think, you know, it's a zero-sum thing that's not zero-sum.
And I wouldn't even say to the uber-rich.
Oh, exactly. Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I mean, how many Trump supporters are poor, right?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, and again, we're getting political, but sometimes, you know, I mean, this is a political movie, really.
Totally.
I mean, it's about everything that's going on. And I agree, too. I think it's looking at, like you said, the millennial version of Magnolia, you know. And in that regard, you know, I don't know if they're going to get as like micro, like a microaggression type thing. Like, oh, you know, we're on college campus with a safe space. Like, I think the topics are probably more broader and more meaningful and powerful than just somebody had a microaggression,
right?
You know, or a micro expression that made me feel uncomfortable because, like, I'm sitting in the barber chair and they kept reading the newspaper, so therefore it's a microaggression. Yeah. I mean, like, I think it's way more than something so mundane, you know?
Yeah. So another reason that I like this trailer, or I think graphically, for me, this trailer was one of the strongest of today's trailers from the lineup. Let me mention a couple things of the other ones. In Predator, the cards in Predator were black on black with just a very hint of an outline. And I think in a movie theater where you're supposed to watch trailers, that would play really, really well. But I think in YouTube space and in small screens and on TV spots, they should lighten up the contrast between the letters and the background, because right now I think it was just like a wash, you know? And I think this, and then in Beautiful Boy has this beautiful old and tattered poster, as if the poster was folded up and held and carried around. So it has like crease marks in the poster image.
Yeah.
So it shows like this loving care for something that you love so much. You're like Mice and Men. But I love him and care for him. But because you carry it around so much and because you hold it so close to your heart, you've actually like worn it to down to this thing that's tattered, you know?
Yeah.
So I thought that was a beautiful portrayal in a poster of a story of their relationship. So then that brings us to this one where I think this is the graphically the strongest of the trailers. You know, it has these bold words on the frame. It has this crazy eye where the eye is so important. It's the only thing that, you know, that goes outside of the realm of the top and bottom constraints of all of the other capital letters. It's all caps. It's yelling at you all the time. It's huge. It takes up the whole screen all the time. You know, it doesn't let you off the hook. It doesn't relent. It is in your face. The coloring, to me, I understand that I thought they were trying to sell it as America because of the guy, because of the little boy's mask in the top of the spot.
Oh, is that creepy or what?
Right, that boy is super creepy. And that boy leads into my 3-word review. But I think throughout, I think they missed the mark on which colors to choose when they're doing it for all the cards. To me, the cards read like either the Dutch, the Netherlands flag or the French flag. It's not the right order for the French flag. So at least they didn't put it, you know, blue, white, red, which I guess is the order of that. But it's kind of like the flag of the Netherlands on its side, you know what I mean? So I think it feels more European than American to me when it starts doing that. But I think that's only upon repeated viewing. I think, you know, initially the first time I saw it, it hit me as America. It was in that executive mindset where you don't watch things once, you watch them 5 or 6 times. And then by the 5 or 6 time you see it, I'm going to give a note that I didn't give the first time I saw it. And I want you to change like your color scheme on these cards to make it look more like a flag. You know, maybe we'll do like cutouts of the flag behind it, you know, as it's flashing from card to card. I think that would have been a better play in this space. It might have dirtied up the letters. So maybe that's why it didn't work. It wouldn't work. But that's definitely what I would have tried to do.
Yeah. And it has a very documentary feel.
Oh, yeah.
And almost, you know, YouTube feel, like when the guy's working out or the girl's taking a picture of a boob or something, you know. And it's like, it looks like someone doing whatever they're going to do just like in the early days of YouTube when it was just people just putting up like cat videos and stuff, you know?
And they didn't know it'd be up there forever.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. So here you go. Americans love war. Because
they love war with themselves.
Well, yeah. I mean, because like every one of these things is like different groups clashing.
Yeah.
For what, I mean, whatever it is, whatever card was flashed, there's a positive and a negative in the group, you know, whatever.
A juxtaposition. It's a point of contention. So that's
exactly.
I agree with your 3-word view, but it is not my 3-word view. That mask at the top was so creepy and just the way they held on it for so long. So
and when he turns and looks at you, you're like, it's an American flag, but it just looks bizarre.
Oh, it just stares you down. So my 3-word review is Spring Breakers Purge.
Spring Breakers Purge? I don't get it.
So there's a great movie called Spring Breakers. With Selena Gomez and James Franco and a bunch of other, you know, attractive young people going on spring break and kind of losing their minds and just having a great spring break time. So this feel has that feel, but then it's speckled and peppered and pepper sprayed with Purge. Like the kid's mask from the top looks like the masks they wear in Purge, which I think is coming out next week. The first Purge is coming out on 4th of July.
Okay, I gotcha.
So it's like a horror version of a spring break movie.
Yeah, I see what you're getting at. That's funny. All right, and last but not least, Disenchantment.
So Disenchantment, there's many angles on this one. Oh, sorry. Last thing about Assassination Nation, very small production company. Neon, I guess, is the main production company. There's a handful of them, but I was not able to secure the editor or the agency for this trailer. If I do come up with it, I'll put it in the show notes and I'll definitely tweet it out or link you to the tweet where it is. But yes, Disenchantment. So Netflix, as if they don't have enough creators, they have Matt Groening from The Simpsons, who also did Futurama, and they nod to both of those creative spaces, and they basically push you into this new space of the past, you know, from the future to the present into the past. And I thought, to me, I'm just going to say my three-word review for this, unless you have a guess.
I'll go for it.
The three-word review, this is perfect legacy cell, because it's a teaser trailer. The only thing they do here is a legacy cell and a legacy cell and a reveal. But not much of a reveal, because we don't have any references to, you know, the mother, the father-daughter relationship that we're being exposed to. It is kind of interesting. I love Futurama. I was a fan of earlier Simpsons stuff, but I guess I've fallen out of the Simpsons, you know, in the last 5 or 10 years.
Forever. 30 years later, it's still going on, you know?
So, I think it's an interesting take, but I don't even know if you can't secure the rights to content, then just grab the creator and tell them, here's a pile of money, create something for me, you know?
Yeah.
And we'll be able to use your legacy in selling our new stuff, even without buying your old stuff, you know? So I think it's a great play, but that's all this is a legacy sell and just the slightest of teases.
Yeah, and I kind of felt the same way. I mean, you know, The Simpsons have been done. Futurama's been done. So they're the present, future, and now past, you know? I don't know. It's kind of like the ghost of Simpsons past or something. Right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. And I probably won't watch it because I don't watch either Simpsons or Futurama. I mean, I've seen episodes of both, but I just like, I'm not about to go back, you know, whatever 30 years or something and start catching up now. I mean, it's just not going to happen, you know?
Not like Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee where you could catch up with it in a week.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But yeah, I can say with certainty though, that this one I'm not going to watch.
Yeah.
Assassination Nation looks pretty, I would say, interesting, and I'd like to watch it, but if I start getting angry, I'll just turn it off.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's the same reason, like, I don't even like watching the news and stuff, you know, because I put on the news and then there's, like, you know, like, craziness going on, people taking kids from their parents, right. You know, it's just like, why am I watching this? It's just, you know, it's like, I don't feel good when I'm done, you know, and so I don't even watch the news half the time. And that's kind of how I feel about that. It's just like a movie made out of the news stories.
Right.
You know? And then, okay, so, you know, Mission Impossible. Yeah, I'll watch that, sure.
Yeah.
Beautiful Boy. Whew. Got to be in the right mindset.
Right mindset.
Yeah, I'd like to watch it. I don't know. I might need a box of tissue. and I know we've talked about that in the past, but man, when you bring in like, I don't care what the movie is. Like, I don't really cry about much. But man, all of a sudden, like, my little boys are involved. Man, like, forget about it. Like, you know, it's like you love those little guys so much, you know? Like, I mean, how can you not feel anything? Like, how can you not put yourself in Steve Carell's situation, you know?
Yeah. No, it's amazing. And it's amazing how when they grew up, like, Audrey is, you know, taller than Anne. Don't tell her I said that. But
yeah.
But when you see her and you just like, what's that car commercial where the little girl's going off and packing the car, and it's this little 6-year-old girl, and I think it's a Subaru or something like that, and she packs all the stuff in the car, and she's finally getting in the car, and the dad and the mom's standing on the driveway, and you look up and it's actually a, you know, a college age girl going off to college, and it's really like that. It's amazing how that captured that moment that I have flash into my head countless times, you know, a week now. It's just like, you know, the fact that she's grown up and, you know, she's like up to my forehead, you know.
It goes so fast.
I don't care. I still can squint and put my mind in a mindset where she's the little girl again, you know, and I can think of the time, you know, 6 years ago.
Oh yeah, no, it goes so fast, you know, and you know, and I think too, it's like every parent's worst nightmare, you know, like, because you want what's best for your kids and, you know, to be successful, and success might not mean making a lot of money or anything, but you want to be happy and content, you know, and maybe have a family or maybe whatever they want, but you just want to be happy and content, you know, you don't want to be homeless drug addicts or something.
Right. And it's like, and it's like it's from potential of the world, you know, like when they're children, they could be anything, do anything, you know, succeed at anything. And then as they grow up, you realize, just like in your own life, that not limitations, but just opportunities. You know, there's an opportunity cost to every choice that you make in your life. And as your children make choices, they've cut off the possibility of the other things that they could have done, you know, and if you see them making too many choices down a wrong path, you want to help them, you know, be the best they can be. And then as they continue to make their own choices and grow as the people they want to be, then in the end, you're like, all right, well, then just at least be safe, you know, like, live through whatever it is that you have to do to grow. And then, you know, and then it's just like that heart-wrenchingness of like, he won't even accept a hotel room for a night.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. And then, Zoe, probably not going to watch that one, but I do want to know if your theory.
I'll watch it and I'll report back.
Yeah, if your theory is correct. And then The Hate U Give, that one I might not. I mean, I think that depends on, it would definitely be a streaming in the house. But yeah. I mean, I think it depends on, you know, I see it come across Netflix and I got a bucket of popcorn that I made. And, you know, boys get to bed and, hey, let's watch this.
Check it out. Yeah. It's a stellar cast, at least, you know.
Oh yeah, no, it looks great. I mean, it looks incredible. I mean, I think it's important, you know. So, but anyway, yeah, that's the lineup, and we're gonna be gone for the month, and then we'll be coming back in August.
We'll still be on Twitter pretty regularly, so I'll be manning that per usual. And then Jimmy and I will be back in August together. But over the next few weeks, as we said before, we'll have recuts of some of our favorite shows in the first season here, and then we'll be back.
All right. Well, Ted, hey, you have a good July, and we'll see you in August.
Awesome. See you then.
Okay, later, man.
Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.